We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Hey, yo, everybody. It's We Talk Wrestling / We Talk Comics. We have a simulcast going tonight. I'm Brett with me, and we are here interviewing a special guest, Michael Kingston, who, of course, has a book out there, a comic book called Headlock. I believe it's about yacht racing. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's all about like the regatta and some sailing and the seedy underbelly of the sailing world. It's really entertaining.
Seedy underbelly. I like the sounds of that.
A lot of drug use and steroids in the yachting industry.
You wouldn't believe it.
Obviously, Headlocked is a comic book you're on. How many? Well, you got. I've only had the opportunity to read the first volume. I think Brett's the same. But this is your third volume that is you have a Kickstarter on right now. Is that correct?
No, we have three volumes, and actually, the Kickstarter that we have going right now is to we're redoing the first volume. We're inking it, recoloring it. We've substantially upgraded since we moved to Kickstarter. With volume two, we've been able to sort of substantially upgrade our production values and whatnot. And so now volume one is kind of like an ugly stepsister a little bit. I mean, obviously I love the book because we built everything off of that, but it was everybody's first book and we did it 5 years before we did the second volume. So we are inking and recoloring the entire book. We're putting about 50 new pages of content in it. And then as always, when we run Kickstarters, because the Kickstarters are how we finance our books, we offer special content produced by wrestlers that you can't get anywhere else. If you buy the books off of our website or if you buy them from me at a convention, they won't have this content in them. And we have stories co-written by Samoa Joe, MVP, The Young Bucks, and then an independent wrestler pinup art gallery featuring a couple of independent guys that have some art skills. And we only give that content to the people who back the Kickstarters because that's the way we get everything made.
So is this the second Kickstarter you've run then?
This is actually our third.
Third. Okay.
So I funded Headlock the Single Step in 2008, sort of on my own. I worked roughly two jobs for over a year to put together enough money to pay for the art and pay for the printing and get it out there in the world. I spent time trying to find a publisher and dealing with some things. And then finally when Kickstarter became like a thing and I had attracted all these different wrestlers that wanted to contribute to the book, we went to Kickstarter to do Headlock the Last Territory, volume one. And then we ran a Kickstarter last year for Headlock the Last Territory, volume two. We'll be running the Kickstarter for volume three probably later on in the summer once this is done. But I hadn't intended to do this, but it sort of became apparent that as I move on to like less personal forms of values are so much better. And you know, I've been primarily dealing with wrestling fans more than comic book fans, so I felt like, you know, if I put a book on Amazon, I need that book to be representative of what we're doing as a whole, and I don't want somebody to be like, hey, you know, I'm not crazy about the art, when you know we can do much better.
So this is basically Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect analogy.
No, that's cool. That's, like I say, I mean, what I've read is Headlock to Single Step. So the idea of actually getting an opportunity to get in the director's cut, the perfect version that you see. Because, I mean, you say, how many years ago? You said 2008? Was it
That was when we published the first single issues. I collected the book itself. I collected it in 2010. And then, it was just a bunch of, just dealing with the comic book industry and attempting to, find publishers, find distribution or whatever, just because we had put it through the initial issues were published through Mark Hoja, and I didn't understand a lot about the comic book industry, you know, just in terms of publisher strength and Diamond and all of the nonsense that goes into it. So, you know, to me, I was just like, oh, I'm go ahead.
No, also, I mean, 2008, you're doing this book. I mean, it's not exactly a history of successful wrestling comic books. I mean, that's going to be a tough sell to us publisher. They don't know really what are we getting here, you know, and how do we market it when most of the books that have been out there at that point are being this bloody awful, right? So,
has been part of it. Yeah. No, that had definitely been part of it. But, and it's funny now because obviously there's more wrestling comics. And, you know, I knew, like, as a wrestling fan, I've been a wrestling fan since I was like 8 years old. And I've been a comic book fan just as long. And I knew that nobody was making the wrestling comic that I wanted to read as a wrestling fan. So I decided to make it myself. And I guess being part of that audience, like, I knew that there was an audience for it. And it was just a matter of proving it to people. But again, you know, it's a very risk averse industry, and it's very difficult to bring new ideas in. And thankfully, you know, in that time since we launched it, Kickstarter became a thing. I had impressed a bunch of wrestlers who wanted to lend their talents to my book, which enabled us to sort of build a sustainable comic book series outside of comics, which I don't know if anybody's ever done that before, and I'm really proud of what we've built it into. You know, it's taken a lot of work, but it's really starting to pay off.
Now, I think this is the perfect time now. Did you ever see yourself becoming a pro wrestler?
You know, it's something I always wanted to do, I think, as a kid, but you know, I'm an older dude. So, you know, I'm 41, But, when I was younger, there wasn't no internets, and, you know, it just wasn't a thing like where you'd know where to go, you know, like there wasn't a clear beaten path or an avenue. And, you know what I mean? I think maybe if I had been born near a wrestling school, I think I most definitely would have done it.
We're here in Canada.
Right. Yeah. If I was in Calgary or anywhere, you know,
you would have got stretched in the dungeon and we would have heard you crying on tape from Stu, and it would have been a good time. The reason I'm asking is because if you ever have wanted to become a wrestler, and here you are, we talk wrestling, we talk comics, and Joe Keating now has this book, Ringside, through Image Comics, and I thought, this is a perfect time to cut a promo on him. I think, put this guy in his place. Come on, Mike, go for it.
See, actually, Joe's a pretty good friend of mine. He's actually backed our Kickstarter.
Even better.
You know, it's funny, though, because Image did turn us down three separate times. And I tell people a lot of the story when I was first pitching the concept of Headlocked. There was somebody straight up laughed in my face, you know, when I had said what I wanted to do. And it's one of those things that sort of fuels you as you go along, you know. But I do find it kind of interesting that they're essentially doing – I know what he's doing is different from what I'm doing, but – you know, initially when you read the pitch or when you read the previews copy, I mean, I had people sending me texts, you know, oh my God, this is totally your book. And what it's not, you know, it's a different thing. And there's obviously the world's big enough for multiple wrestling comics, but I do find it kind of funny that they were, you know what I mean? They turned me down so many times and then ended up doing a wrestling comic.
Rick, you have any questions?
I was going to ask, is there any fear of kind of burning out Kickstarter?
I've done a pretty good job of educating my audience that this is how we make it happen. It's not so much funding the book. It's a pre-order for us. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not necessarily asking for money and for, you know, to fund, like, I don't make a dime off of the book. I pay my writers, I pay my artists, or I pay my artists and I pay my printers and I pay for shipping. Any money that I make beyond that goes right back into the book. So it's just for us, that's how people get the book. You know what I mean? I don't need people to back it at $500 levels. I just want people to buy the book through Kickstarter, better book, a book that they can't get anywhere else. You know, I try to make it worth their while. And it's not like we're going to end up doing two Kickstarters this year. But ideally, I probably want to run one you know, once a year beyond this, once I get this taken care of.
Now, do you ever think that if a publisher like Image came and said, okay, now we'd like you to publish the book through us, you know, and you're, and it's time to forget the Kickstarter and just kind of go with us, would that be a possibility?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like at this point, I mean, the amount of miles and the amount of hours and the amount of traveling that I've spent to get it to this point, you know, I almost don't know if anybody else deserves to sort of share in those spoils. I like the ability to do what I want, and I like the ability to do it at the pace that I can do it at, because I have a regular job. So yeah, no, I mean, I think someday I might want to release the books through Diamond myself. I don't know if I'd ever want to do single issues. You know, if somebody wanted to help me distribute trades just to get them in the direct market, then I might be into that. But honestly, I just like doing the book. You know, I'm not in this to write Spider-Man or Superman or anything else. Like, this is what I want to do. And if I'm not doing this, I don't know if there's anything else I want to do. So I just want to make sure that we can do it, you know, to the best of our ability, instead of trying to rush to feed the beast, so to speak, you know?
Right. You want to go, or you want me to
go ahead? Go ahead. Ask another.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mike, you're kind of 2008. How have your skills changed as a storyteller? How much personally do you think that you've improved?
I mean, I think everybody, just with experience, I think you get better. I mean, I think the stuff that we're doing now is much better. I have a better idea of what I want Headlock to be. Maybe even than what I did back in 2008. You know, I feel like everybody, I mean, Jerry was doing the covers. I mean, the covers that Jerry's doing now are doing these Norman Rockwell homages that are amazing. You know, and he was just getting back into art when I had contacted him to do stuff. You know, we have a new artist who, like I said, is a wrestler from New Zealand, who is a different artist and was on a single step. So our, I think everybody's growing leaps and bounds. There's a pinup in the back of a single step that was done by Scott Lost, who's one of the founders of PWG, who is a retired independent wrestler who's now a comic book artist. And he's a million times better. Like, that was his first ever piece of comic book art that he, you know, published comic book art, was in the back of Headlock. And this, he's doing one in this book too, just to show how far he's come. So, I think I've grown a lot. My understanding of everything is grown, you know, because I'm always paying attention and studying and trying to better myself.
Now, the world you created, the world you created, I mean, from reading it the first time, I felt like, okay, he's taking different parts of history and pulling those together to tell the story he wants to tell. And one of the things I was trying to understand was kind of what era the book was set in. I was having a little bit of confusion about that. Where is it? Where is the book? Where is it set?
I deliberately try to keep that somewhat vague, if that makes sense, because I want it to be accessible to people, and I don't want people to worry about this guy is supposed to be this guy, and this guy is an allegory for this guy, or a cipher or whatever. Like, I just want people to follow the story. I don't want them to necessarily worry, because you get into that too much where, you know, I made this sort of like WWE style, like almost an 80s WWE style, federation to be like the main group, because I feel like even despite the Attitude Era or whatever, I still think like the 80s WWE is what most people identify with, the largest group of people identify with, when it comes to wrestling. But I don't want people to necessarily worry about, you know, oh, this is the Undertaker guy and this is the Hulk Hogan guy. Like, that's not really what the story is about. I mean, the story is about the kid, like, learning the craft of wrestling and sort of coming of age. So I try not to get people, you know, oh, is he taking a shot at somebody with this or any of that? Like, that's not really what I want it to be. So I do try to make it a little bit vague. It's sort of like if the main company was like sort of the 80s WWE, but then there was like, you know, sort of a, you know, like an ECW sort of growing, sort of on the horizon, almost like you're skipping like the late 90s or the early 90s, I mean. There's a little bit of everything.
Go ahead. Sorry. So it's not that you're saying to people who are maybe non-wrestling fans, pick this up, this is what wrestling is today. That's not what you're saying. You're really saying this is a story that fits. It's a story that is being told within wrestling, but probably could be told about almost any profession because it's about the person, right?
To a certain extent, yes. But I also want, like, part of it is I want people to be able to pick it up who maybe don't know that much about wrestling. And it isn't so much to get them to learn about what WWE is. It's to get them to learn about the craft and the art form of wrestling. Ultimately, that's sort of what I want it to be. Like, I'm trying to tell this interesting story about this kid sort of navigating the underbelly of the wrestling business. But then at the same time, like, I'm, you know, and we're farther along, you know, in his journey in the books that you haven't read yet, but he's sort of learning, like, he learns like a different piece of the wrestling business. Maybe one issue he learns running the ropes and, you know, body slams or whatever. And like, so, you know, he learns like one piece of the wrestling business, but at the same time it sort of translates or ties into him like coming of age at the same time. You can read this interesting story about this kid chasing his dream and, you know, all of his obstacles, you know, much in the same way that you don't have to know, you don't have to be a fan of boxing to appreciate Rocky, but the medicine that's kind of in the food, so to speak, is that I hope that, you know, people come to read this entertaining story and then, you know, maybe they come away with an increased appreciation of, you know, what professional wrestling is as a storytelling medium and an art form versus more like, this is what WWE is, this is what ECW is or whatever, that it's just it's a storytelling medium and it's a craft. And there's so much more that goes into it that people who are so just dismissive of it, you know, that fake stuff or whatever, it's so ridiculous. You know, so you sort of try to sneakily educate people, you know, when it's all said and done. And I've had a lot of people who bought the book who were interested in the story and not necessarily wrestling fans who have come back to me and been like, wow, you know, I really had no idea that there was so much more to wrestling than I ever realized. So ultimately, I think that's what I'm trying to do more than everything else. It's a love letter to the craft of professional wrestling, and some of the negative aspects of the business sort of drive the story.
And you know, I think that's one of the things when I read it, that is one of the things that did stick out as you referred to it as the art several times. And I would imagine that one of the reasons that you've had so many wrestlers come to you and appreciate the book and want to take part of it is that exact attitude, that's what they appreciate that you're presenting.
And that's the thing, I think, with other wrestling comics that have existed over the years. Like, it was people that licensed WWE stuff when wrestling was hot, or, you know, maybe it was a vanity project for Kevin Nash or Ultimate Warrior or whatever. But people, I think, are savvy enough to know when they're being sold to. We're not trying to sell anybody action figures. Like, everybody that's affiliated with the book loves wrestling and they love comics. Like, I have wrestlers that want to be a part of the book, but they're just, you can kind of tell when you're talking to them that they just want to put themselves over. And that's not what I want. You know, I don't need that. I don't want that. Like,
you're saying Triple H wants to be part of the book?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard Triple H call people comic book nerds on more than one occasion. So, you know, maybe he's not a big comic book fan. But, you know, like, I mean, obviously guys like Hurricane, Daniels, Rob Van Dam, I mean, all these guys, Joe, they're comic book fans and they're wrestling fans. And so I feel like you can feel the passion for what, you know, for what we're doing. And I feel like that's the thing that sets us apart from, you know, WWE comics or, you know, WCW comics or whatever else, is that we all love wrestling and we all love comics and we're trying to do sort of the best blend of that we can.
Now, the first wrestler that you worked with, who was it? And did you approach him or did he approach you?
The first wrestler I ever did anything with was, Sean, there's a character that's based on Sean Devari, in the first book, and I had met him at a show, and he was like super, super into it, and wrote me an email. He's like, hey, I'd really like to be a part of this. So I just, you know, like I made him a character in the book just because I was really sort of jazzed that he was, you know, that he was so excited about what we were doing. And then sort of in that time, Hurricane and Rob Van Dam had bought my book from me at San Diego. I'm trying to think of who else. Chris Daniels I had met. You know, and they were all like, oh, this is really cool. I really like this. You know, anything we can do to help. And then in the meantime, I reached out to Jerry Lawler. So it's the craziest story to me, and it still doesn't seem real. But I just emailed him through his website. Like, I forgot I did it after I did it because it was such like a weird, random, long shot. I was just like, yeah, you know, what's the worst that could happen? I'll probably never hear anything. And then maybe like 2 weeks later, I got an email back. He's like, here's my address, send me a couple of your books, and I'll take a look at it. And I'm still kind of like, eh, you know, whatever. And then I sent him the books, and maybe like a week after that, I get a phone call, and it's him. And I'm, obviously his voice is very distinctive. You know what I mean? Like, it can't be a joke. It's him. And we get talking, and, you know, I asked him if he'd do a cover for the book, and he's like, oh, absolutely, I'd love to. And so I met him when he was on the road at a few indie shows in my town. We worked some stuff out. I got to actually watch him paint the book, or paint the first cover. In addition to being a world championship wrestler, he's also a world champion procrastinator. So, and I've learned to work with those parameters now. Like, I know I'm going to get a gorgeous piece of art from him, but it's going to come on the day that I tell him I need it. So, I hadn't quite learned that at the beginning. So I was at an independent show in upstate New York, and like Samoa Joe and I were in this hotel room with him, like sitting on the bed, watching him paint the cover. And it was really, I mean, it ended up being a really neat experience. But you know, and then he tells a story about when he broke into wrestling, how he had mailed his art to the Memphis TV station and Lance Russell had put his art on the air. And that sort of, you know, led to all the circumstances that led to him becoming a wrestler. And he said, you know, all those years ago, Lance Russell took a chance on me and put my artwork on television, and it totally changed my life. You know, so when I read your email, like, I totally got that feeling, and I was like, you know, this is a way that I could pay that kindness forward to somebody else. And it did. It totally changed everything, you know, all the sort of parameters and logistics and expectations I could have for this book by having somebody like that attached.
And the endorsement of someone like that, I'm sure that helped the Kickstarter and the comic book fans and the wrestling fans.
Just anybody, you know, like, I mean, it helps with other wrestlers. It got me credibility with other wrestlers when I were dealing with them, because, you know, a lot of times I'd meet him at a show and I'd meet him with Jerry, you know, and there's sort of a different, you know, level of connection. They're like, ah, hey, the kid's with me or whatever. Then, you know, you're sort of not treated as an outsider. And then when you're pitching
into wrestling fans, Jerry freaking Lawler, right?
What's that?
And he is Jerry freaking Lawler. I mean,
it's insane. And like, one of the things that I've come to learn, because I mean, now we're really good friends, you know, we hang out and stuff, and it's unbelievable how famous he is. Like, we were in Kansas City, and a celebrity who was signing autographs at Kansas City in the bathroom to talk to him about Andy Kaufman. Howard Chaykin like flagged him down and like gushed about him, about how much he loved like watching wrestling as a kid and how much it meant to him. And I feel like his agent, I think it was his agent that was with him, because I've known him for 30 years and I've never seen him react like that to anybody. You know, and he's the most regular guy you'd ever want to meet. Like, just to know him, like, I mean, we go to art museums, like, he's a secret art nerd, which I think is funny, but like, he's super, super humble. And, you know, he doesn't see himself as like a superstar. He goes, you know, I've heard him say it before, because I just feel like I'm this guy that stuff, all this stuff has sort of happened to. And he's done so many things for so many people. Like, he's really just a great guy. And, I don't know. It's interesting to be around him and to see how other people treat him and how he hasn't really let that ever go to his head, you know, in all those years.
That's why I think that's why he has been such a big star, is well, not only did he throw maybe the best right hand in the history of the business, but he also, you know, he is that everyman, and he looks like an everyman, and there was that relatable persona is such a big deal to why, and it's the same thing, like what people were appealed to, you know, with him is what, say, they were attracted to, same thing with a Daniel Bryan. It's that kind of same, you know, that I feel like I can get behind this guy because I get him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's really been a, you know, as a kid who's been a lifelong wrestling fan, I mean, it's sort of like a dream to be able to work with these guys and to have them like what I'm doing. I mean, like I love, like, Helms, like Hurricane as a character. Like, that was, you know, as a comic book fan, that was, like, my favorite dude forever. And then, like, he bought my book for me, and now, I mean, he and I are friends. Like, we're both Washington Redskins fans. We text all the time during football season. I mean,
I'm sorry about that.
We send each other, you know, and stuff. We send each other jokes. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I consider him a friend, and it's just kind of neat to have people that you grew up respecting sort of respect what you're doing. And, you know, that part of it, I think, is more fulfilling than, you know, anything else that we've done.
So have you had any of those moments from a comic book perspective where there's artists and writers that you respect comic book wise that have come up to you and given you some compliments?
The coolest thing for me was Joe Lansdale told me that he was really impressed with the book, and that really sort of tickled me to no end. That not only did he like it, but he thought enough to come back and tell me, you know, I read this whole thing and this is really good. But outside of that, I'm trying to think if there's, you know, I know there's a lot of people in comics who like wrestling, but, you know, for whatever reason, like I said, I feel like for the longest time, like, I don't feel like we even existed in comics because we didn't, you know, use Diamond. And, you know, my only sort of connection to the comic book business was doing conventions. But even then, we did, like, the bigger pop culture conventions like New York and San Diego versus, you know, versus shows like Heroes Con and whatever. But we did just do Emerald City this past week, and it was insane. I mean, we sold out of volume one of the last territory on Saturday morning. We sold out of
too bad you don't come to volume two on Sunday. If you were to come to the Calgary Expo and 110,000 people in a city with a booming economy, I think you'd do really well.
I've been trying to get Jerry to come, but he doesn't like the cold, man.
You know what? It's in May. It's not that freaking cold. It was, let me see, 27 degrees today. What is that, like 92 or something like that?
No, and I understand that, but I think that he's just got like a weird mental block.
No, he's just worried Brett's going to make him kiss his own feet again. I think that's what it is.
I was trying to get him to come to Fan Expo too, because I really like that show. Like, I love Toronto as a city. You know, but it's tricky now because he just bought a bar in Memphis on Beale Street, so it's going to be a little trickier. You know, he's still going to do shows, but his availability is probably going to be a little trickier.
You have other wrestlers who attend sometime the conventions with you?
Yeah. No, I've done, most of the guys that have contributed to my book have done at least a show with me. I've done a couple shows with Helms, Booker T, Ken Anderson. I just did C2E2 with Mick Foley. He's going to be contributing to the next volume. I've done John Morrison, Kaz Daniels, tons of people, really. And that's how I try to build bridges. You know, I do these shows, people come to my tables and they can make money. You know what I mean? I make them money by letting them come to my table, but then they draw a crowd with which I can sort of, introduce people to my book. So it's sort of one of those deals where everybody wins. And I mean, the guys all know, like, I'm not trying to get rich and I'm not trying to take a cut of their money, you know, just come to my table and make some money for yourself. And, you know, you bringing people there is all I really need. So I develop good relationships that way. It's been pretty cool.
Now, do you want to spend just the rest of the time here talking about Joe R. Lansdale and some of his great work? Or... Big fan of him as well. I would also freak out if he came up to me and said he enjoyed your stuff.
Yeah, it was a real big moment, you know, like just the, you know, because everybody's so busy. I mean, particularly in comics. I mean, everybody's got deadlines. You know, people don't have time to read. I mean, I barely have time to read anything anymore. From the fact that he took my book and read the whole thing and then came back to tell me how much he liked it and then sent me an email after that. Like, it was super cool of him. And that's why I was on cloud nine.
Now, do you also do the wrestling conventions or just mainly just the comic book conventions?
No, I mean, honestly, the wrestling business is really how I built the audience. You know, I go to indie shows and set up. I go to, you know, which is cool because I get to watch wrestling. I write the travel off on my taxes. You know, and that also helps me network with guys and get in front of guys because I'm there before the doors open up. So guys are there, they're relaxed, they're looking at my stuff. You know, but, like the next two shows I'm doing are wrestling shows. I'm doing a Northeast wrestling show, then I'm doing Evolve. I sold my stuff at WrestleCon at Mania. I sell my stuff at ROH all the time. Like I do really well there. Chikara, I kill at Chikara at King of Trios every year. So, you know, that's how I sort of built my fan base initially when I didn't have, you know, a publisher name to sort of put out there for people. I built it on the wrestling side of things and, you know, we do Comic Cons as I was able to. And now I'm able to do more because we make more money at the show. So then I can do more shows and I can pay for better spaces instead of, you know, being an artist alley. I can pay for a booth now because I know I'm going to sell enough books to cover my table expenses. And, you know, it just sort of, it grows from there. It's just been a slow process, but you know, it feels like it's really starting to catch a little bit for us.
So now when you're watching, what do you watch? Or what do you think of the current wrestling product out there? What's kind of what are you kind of digging?
I love Lucha Underground more than anything that I've loved in a long time. I had lunch. I did WonderCon and had lunch with dinner with John Morrison after the Lucha tapings. And before, like, the first thing I said to him was, like, listen, I'm totally dead serious about this. If you spoil anything for me, I will kill you. Like, I literally don't want to know anything. Like, I don't want to know what happens. Like, I'm so invested in it. I'm invested in the characters and the story, and I love it more than I could even do justice.
Yeah, I really hope that I know they've taped now through their third season, and I hope that it continues going into the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh seasons that they had planned. Because I mean, I'm trying to explain to people, I think that's a great gateway show in many ways, because it's not a wrestling TV show, it's a TV show about wrestling, but because of that, it's completely right. Fresh.
Yeah, no, I think they've gotten so much out of so many characters that historically people haven't gotten anything out of. I mean, like, I feel like this is the best that anybody's ever used Chavo Guerrero.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, he's just a shit show. In Aztec Warfare, he comes in the ring for, like, just, it's just so perfect. And I think it's great. You know what I mean? They've got guys like Cage who really hadn't been discovered per se by the mainstream audience. And then the amazing, you know, Lucha guys, but then, you know, they've got like Ezekiel Jackson. I mean, they got a ton out of him. And you know, I mean, Reyes was still wrestling, honestly, you know what I mean? But they found a way to get the most out of these guys. And I think that speaks to, you know, when you watch WWE and you watch them burn through storylines, you know, where you're like, man, that could have been a 7-week storyline that they just blew off and burned through characters. And, you know, you see how economically they handle, you know, Lucha Underground handles their characters, how much they get out of them. And, you know, there's been a couple of where, you know, in the first episode of season two, when Pentagon comes out at the end, like, it's probably the hardest I sort of marked out, like, as a fan, probably since, I want to say, like, 2005 Samoa Joe. Like, it was like, I was like, holy cow. Like, I totally just marked out. Like, I didn't have any of my smarky analysis or whatever, which is almost impossible to turn off. Like, I was just, holy cow. Like, there's Mil Muertes and there's Pentagon. What's going to happen here? And I haven't felt that way in wrestling in forever. And it was just, it was a great feeling. You know, I felt like I was 8 years old again.
Now, as a writer, do you think that them burning through, you know, the storylines, as you say, a 7-week storyline and, you know, a couple of shows, do you think that's due to storytelling techniques, or is that due to having to fill 5 hours of TV a week compared to just one for Lucha Underground, and not even a weekly one? You know, and they only do, what, like 30, I think, in the first season. I'm not sure how many in the second season, so...
No, I mean, I think burning through a story is burning through a story. I mean, if you have a potential 7-week story that you burn out in 2 weeks, that's just, it's poor writing, it's poor long-term planning. And, you know, and I mean, I've heard, you know, they write stories, Vince comes in and changes them, you know, they react to the ratings on a weekly basis. Like, I think sometimes you just got to tell your stories. I mean, like, one of the storylines that sticks with me, and it stuck with me for such a long time, was the just Balls Mahoney and Kelly Kelly. And I mean, they never paid it off, but I mean, people were invested in that. It was a simple story that just worked with those characters. And you know what I mean? Like, it went on for a while and you were into it. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be complicated, but it can't be stupid. And I just feel like they don't get enough out of these storylines. And you know, there's I don't want to say a diminishing talent pool, because obviously the indies are super hot, but, you know, like, the talent pool isn't what it used to be, because so many guys go into MMA now instead of going into wrestling. So you're looking at a smaller talent pool than you've had in years past, and you can't, I don't know, I feel like you just got to be careful with these characters, because they have a choice. There comes a point where you're just like, I've seen this guy for years, and I just don't want to see him anymore. So I feel like you got to get the most out of them when you can.
I know what, I have to agree with everything you just said, which is unfortunate, because it's better radio if we can argue. But over wrestling especially. But no, I absolutely agree. The pacing is all off. And the system is off when you have 26 writers and then none of them can push their story through, because the last minute this changes anyways. It's like the system seems to be broken, and everybody can see that, and even the WWE will acknowledge that on TV in their storylines, but don't actually do anything to fix it. So it's a strange, very strange system. But I think one of the things about, I mean, obviously TNA now is, this week it comes out about how they're up for sale, and they're just completely, you know, strapped, and if they're not sold, then they're going to go out of business, and people were, they were the great hope for a while, but we are in a different age where you talk about those indies, and now we're, I mean, let's put it this way. In 1999, I couldn't see ECW. Like, before it got on TNN, I could maybe get a tape for here or there from somebody, and I could, hopefully maybe I could buy a pay-per-view, or if I was at some bar where they had a satellite, maybe we'd pick up a feed from New York and I'd be able to see it. But the truth was, I couldn't watch it. I was stuck with WWF at the time and WCW, and I wanted to see this ECW, and I was struggling to see it. This day and age, if I want to watch Revolution Pro from, you know, or from England, or I want to watch PWG, or I want to watch, CMLL or AAA, or, you know, New Japan or Jersey All Pro Wrestling, there are online and ways and legal ways that I can do so and give them my money and enjoy it. So the need for an alternative isn't really the same as it used to be, because the alternative is just the fact we're in a digital world and it's everywhere.
I agree with that to a point, but I also think to a certain extent, there's so many fans. And this is the one thing that bothers me about the current wrestling scene. Like, I'm very happy. Like, a lot of my friends are at NXT and doing very well, and I enjoy the product very much. But it bothers me that people will complain about Raw for 10 years. I mean, if they had supported ROH in 2005, or say Shimmer in 2005, I mean, all the people screaming about the Divas Revolution when Dave Prezak did it 11 years ago, like, if people had just supported the companies that were giving them what they wanted, instead of just bitching about Raw, like, you could have had like you could have had Styles and Joe and Punk and Dragon all in the same, you know, in their primes, you know, all tearing it up instead of, you know what I mean? You're never going to see AJ Styles wrestle CM Punk now, like on a big stage, because you know what I mean? It's a different, you know, the timing didn't work out, but I mean, like, it frustrates me to a certain extent because there are people who are just going to support WWE. Like, if the entire roster quit and went to TNA tomorrow, like, I don't think the ratings would change that much because people are just WWE brand slaves. And that I mean, it's...
There are people that are wrestling snobs. Yeah, there are people that are wrestling snobs. They will not... I was trying to get my We Talk Wrestling co-host, Addy, to watch Evolve during the WrestleMania weekend, and he wouldn't. And then he admits, he goes, I'm not really into it. I'm like, you realize that probably two-thirds of these people are going to be in this cruiserweight global tournament that they're having on the WWE Network that you're all into and can't wait to watch. And here you go. And he goes, yeah, but I'm a wrestling snob. I want to watch them when they're at the highest production values and promoted in the way I'm used to. And it's like, how do you fight that?
Yeah, no, and that's always been my thing as an independent, as a guy who writes a non-WWE, non-superhero comic. There's just people that'll be like, you know, like I'll see it with Marvel fans. They'll be like, oh, can I get this in stores? And I'll be like, no, that's not how I do it. And you can tell there's a certain like, oh, well, maybe it's not, you know, it's just not good enough or, you know, and you see it, you know, I mean, Kevin Steen probably wrestled in your town, you know, in everybody's town. And people, you know, and obviously when he showed up, enough people knew who he was because people bought his shirts and people popped for him and whatever. But I mean, there's a good chunk of people that wouldn't drive 20 minutes to see him wrestle in their town that drove 4 hours to watch him wrestle on an NXT show somewhere. And that's tough because it doesn't force WWE to produce the best television. They have to, because they sort of know they have like a 3.0 without trying. Like, those people are going to be there every week no matter what. And you know what I mean? Like, there's no real stakes for them to have to produce great television. I mean, I don't know. This was the first WrestleMania that, and I know their injuries played a part of it, but this was the first WrestleMania that was like sort of network, seemingly network exclusive. And I mean, I don't think anybody would argue it was the weakest lineup they've ever had for a WrestleMania. You know, and
WrestleMania 9 was pretty bad.
Right, right. No, agreed.
But
I don't know if that's...
But in the modern era, yeah.
Right, and I don't know if that's a function of just the injuries or whatever. You know what I mean? If Cena and Rollins and Cesaro and Orton are there, is it a different show? Is it a better show? Or is it just the same? Like, that I don't know. Like, I don't know how motivated they are to... You know, I don't think they're as motivated as they were during the Monday Night Wars, obviously, to put on blowaway shows and to go out there and really to win the audience. So
I don't know. Like, to a degree, but I do think that the ego of Vince McMahon is such that he wants people to love him and his product. I do believe that. I just think that he doesn't understand the current wants and needs of this audience. And that's the issue. The landscape has changed because the way people see fighters and skill levels, and part of this is because of the influence of MMA and seeing different weight classes and knowing that it's not just the most muscular guy that's going to win anymore. And all this different stuff has changed the landscape of, and also people, I think, are offended by seeing a guy who looks like he's roided up to the max now. I think people are literally offended by that. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that changed.
Part of it, though, too, is that there's two distinct wrestling fans. And there's, you know, there's the sort of the internet insider, smart fans, whatever. And then there's just the people who've always been wrestling fans. You know, I do all these Comic-Cons with Jerry, and Jerry will ask people, you know, who's your favorite wrestler? And almost 100% of the time, they say John Cena, Roman Reigns, or Daniel Bryan. And, like, that's what I see, you know, like, when you go to house shows, there's a different reaction. You know what I mean? Like, so there's a mix of what people want. I don't necessarily know what the right way to service the audience is, because I feel like if the internet existed in the 80s, I feel like Hulk Hogan would get the same exact reaction that John Cena got. And
that's true.
I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know how you can produce, you know, unless you go like sort of ROH versus CZW, where it's almost two distinct, you know, where it's two distinct brands and you're sort of treating it like a sporting event, you know, or maybe like the NXT guys or, you know, it's NXT versus WWE guys. And it's, you know, every match is, you know, a work rate guy versus a bodybuilder guy or something. And, you know, and maybe, you know, you get like almost a sporting event feel. It's tricky though, you know, like, I don't know like you see a guy like Adam Rose, like he gets over on NXT and he's super popular on NXT and everybody's talking about it. And then they bring him to the show. And I get that he wasn't written super well, but like, if you're not watching NXT, how is he a face? Like, I don't think Russell Brand is a super popular human being. I don't think, you know, you see like a party guy like that, like that's a naturally heel character, but there's people who are going to appreciate the character for the performance aspect of it and cheer him. But then to the other half of the audience, they're like, why would I boo this guy with a lollipop in his mouth? Because that's a traditional, like, everything about him is traditionally a heel character. So then you end up with a mixed reaction. And it's tough. I don't know what wrestling can do to combat that.
You mentioned CZW. Do you know people that work there? Do you
have any contact? Actually, Danny Havoc is doing a pinup in the our Kickstarter book.
They're the one
I think is amazing.
It's kind of, you know, I mean, and not to get off on too serious a topic here, but with given what's just happened with, you know, Balls Mahoney, Axel, Ian Rotten and Axel Rotten, sorry, and just that the fact that a federation of that style, that hardcore style, still exists, I just wonder if it's even right. I mean, I guess if there's an audience for it, but I feel like
but it's not just that there's an audience for it. Going.
Pardon
like,
me?
There's wrestlers that want to do that. You know, Danny Havoc, like, he doesn't want to, that's what he wants to do. Like, that's what he enjoys doing. And I know that seems odd to a lot of people, and I think it's always going to be a super niche thing, but if that's what he wants to do, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, if that's the way that he wants to tell his art. What's that?
Do we protect them for themselves, I guess? You're right. Do we have the right to do that? You know?
Can you?
Protect people
from themselves?
I don't know. It's like Demolition Man. You know, what was it Sandra Bullock said? Everybody has a right to be an asshole. So,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's crazy because I saw A.R. Fox and I was backstage at a show. It was right after Cage of Death. And his back was all, like, he had taken a bump into glass and his back was all bandaged up. And I'm looking at a guy like that with that kind of athleticism. I mean, he doesn't need to do that stuff. You know, his back is still scarred up. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if that's a pressure thing. I mean, I didn't talk
what
to
they
him,
want to
ask
do
him
now,
about it.
Just because that's what they want to do now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, if they are, you know, I mean, even a Mick Foley, I mean, if you ask him, I think he regrets some of the stuff he did because it's made it difficult for later in his years and with his younger children to do some of the things he would like to do. So
I think that's a, you know what I mean? People smoke cigarettes when they're young. They probably wish they didn't when they had to suffer the ill effects of them. I mean, I think everybody makes those choices every day. You know, maybe I shouldn't eat all those hamburgers now that I got diabetes or whatever. I mean, there's a million choices that we make. I think that sort of define our later years. And I think that's just up to everybody as a human being to make those choices for themselves. I mean, one of the things that I find fascinating, I was talking to, I don't know what, Tommy Dreamer at one point was prepared to get shot for an ECW angle. I don't know if you've ever heard the story, but he's told it before where they were going to do an angle. Like he pitched an angle to Heyman that he was going to get shot in the shoulder. And Heyman wouldn't do it because he was worried that a bullet would ricochet and hit a fan. And he didn't want to take the risk. But I mean,
wasn't about the
wrestling
fan that he was worried.
He was, you know what I mean? Like the seduction of wrestling or whatever. Like he was so committed to what he was doing that he was willing to take a bullet for it, which I think is, you know, I mean, it's scary, but on some level, I mean, it's amazing that people are willing to give of themselves for their art form, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. It's like Van Gogh, you know, if he was painting with blood, I don't know. I mean, it's morbid in a way, but it's, there's a certain level of romanticism that, you know, somebody would be willing to go that far to, you know, to tell their stories. And I don't know. I mean, only wrestling has that power, I think, really.
That's great to do a comic book on.
Well, that's what I feel about it. And that's why those are the types to put out, you know, put into the book and make people understand, you know?
All right, Brett, do you have any wrestling or more likely comic book questions left?
Well, I'll tie one together, I guess, because you talked earlier about the idea of storylines, and I guess the question that I would ask is, does this kind of allow you to fulfill a dream by, say, writing storylines the way you would write them into your comic book?
You mean like wrestling storylines?
Yeah, like wrestling storylines. So like storylines within your storyline.
I haven't really gotten to that point yet. I mean, the first book is him trying to get into wrestling school, and then like just basically learning, like he's learning the business and sort of navigating. So we're not really doing sort of wrestling storylines per se. I mean, one of the hardest things is just coming up with characters, just because, I mean, everything's been done, and I don't necessarily need the characters to be, like, the character that they are isn't necessarily a big part of the story, but they have to have some kind of character. So coming up with characters for guys is kind of a pain in the ass. One of the things that I like, and I know this isn't answering your question, but is we do for the Kickstarter, we do a lot of drawings where people can be drawn in as wrestlers and stuff like that. And so a good chunk of the roster in the last territory are people who've supported the book at a level that we've drawn them in as wrestlers, and we give them a, you know, we do like a full commission sketch of them, like as that wrestler using their facial likeness. And I think that's kind of a cool thing because it's such a grassroots thing, and like the people that are supporting us the most are literally becoming part of the book and part of the story, and they're so invested in it. And I think that's pretty cool. It makes me happy.
Do you know the end point for this for the storyline, for this character, are you just kind of letting it go story by story? And are you hot shotting here, or are you planning?
I mean, I know how it's going to end, but the middle is variable. You know, I mean, the cool thing to me about wrestling is there's so many different, there's so much, the culture is so rich. I mean, I could take them to Japan, I could take them to Mexico. I mean, there's, you know, we can talk about whole territories. There's so much to the business. There's so much to the art form and the culture. I mean, I love working on it. I love writing it. Like, I just want to do it as long as I can do it. And I'll do it, you know, if I write it for 10 years and I don't ever make a dime and I don't lose a dime, like, I would be the happiest guy ever. I just want to tell the story as long as people will allow me to tell it.
Spoken like a true comic book writer.
I appreciate the fact that you've managed to find an alternate means of acquiring fans as opposed to the typical way.
And that's, I think, the trick. Like, I have a friend that writes books about horses, and it's an all ages book. And I told him, like, you should go to racetracks and try to get them to make like a bulk purchase for, like, you know, kids night, or, you know what I mean? For people who bring kids, they can get a free comic, and go to equestrian museums and stuff like that. I mean, like, you got to find a different fan base, because the comic book industry is not going to do you any favors until you can bring an audience. Like, there's no way. Like, no one's going to order your book. Like, retailers aren't going to order your book without a publisher, and publishers aren't going to pick you up unless you have an audience or a name. And even then, I mean, they chose to go with Ringside. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know what I mean? I had, you know, 5-6 years of, you know, building a fan base and 20 established wrestlers attached to my book. And they, you know, went with somebody else. So it's, comics to me feels like more of a social business. Like, it's not about making money. It's more about, I don't know, maybe nerds that have some power and now they want to hold on to it. It's tough.
Well, I can see that locked on HBO. It'd be great.
No, I'd love to. Honestly, I'd love it to be a late night cartoon.
Oh, like, yeah.
The one thing that always would bother me, I think, is that, you know, when they film wrestling, like, guys have to take like 100 bumps for like one scene. And knowing the toll that takes on people, like, I'd really feel shitty if somebody got hurt, you know, or some guy's like future mobility was lessened. So what I would like to do is do like a late night cartoon and then get wrestlers to do the voiceovers.
That's awesome.
And then, you know, whatever, that gets those guys like an acting credit. It gets them a foot out of the ring, and nobody has to, but we can still do a cool show. I've got a thing on YouTube. We did a motion comic. Ken Anderson did one of the voices and Kevin Gill did the other one. And probably in the next week or two, we're going to do we're doing a motion comic based on the story that Shane Helms wrote for our first Kickstarter. And I think that's going to get a little bit of play because it's dealing with injuries and a guy's career ending. And I think it's a pretty powerful story. And I think I know Shane wants to push the hell out of it because he's really happy with the story. So hopefully that'll be making the rounds in front of people. That's going to be sort of my last blitz towards getting people to pledge for the Kickstarter towards the end.
Now, we'd love to get you back on then when, I guess it's coming pretty quick though, but when you got your next Kickstarter going, how long are you running that one for?
Which one? This one?
The next one. This one's running for another 20 days.
It'll be 60 days because I'll be trying to get more money. Generally, I mean, unless this one blows up and then I can put it towards the other one. Generally, we try to get 20,000. I only needed to get 10,000 for this one to pay for the new content and the new printing and stuff. So we got that on like the second day. So it really wasn't that hard. And that's the thing. It's just about conditioning the audience. And that's, you know, I always talk to my audience. I talk to everybody on Facebook, the people who follow me, and I let them know, like, this is how we make these books happen, and this is what we need to do. And, you know, luckily people have been supportive. So I've been super, super lucky just with the whole thing and how it's all gone down for me. I mean, I work insanely hard. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, I've also had a lot of good fortune.
Are you at work right now? Is that what you, is that, we read that from the email. What job do you do that you can?
I'm a warehouse supervisor. we were talking on my lunch break. So,
oh, nice.
But yeah, no, I mean, I basically try to get 30-year-old rednecks to not draw dicks on things. That's mostly what I do.
I was
for a living.
I was a warehouse supervisor for a year once. That was a hard year.
I love it, honestly. I mean, I've done it forever.
I was too young to do the job, really.
Right. Well, I worked in warehousing to put myself to college. And then when I got out of college, there weren't a lot of jobs. So I took a supervisor job. Now it's just where my earning potential is. I like working nights because I can write during the day when I'm awake. And I give the best part of my day to myself. And then work gets what's left. And it allows me working Sunday through Thursday to do a lot of shows. So I can leave Friday morning when I get out of work. I go to the airport. I fly somewhere. I do a show for 3 days. I fly home. I come from the airport. I go right to work. And it works out really well for me. I mean, I don't sleep a lot. There's a lot of weekends I'm not home ever. But I just did a 4-week back-to-back-to-back-to-back stint. I did C2E2, WonderCon, Mania, and Emerald City. And I thought that was going to kill me, but I managed to get out of it. I caught the flu in the middle too. That's brutal.
Amazing though, when you have passion for something, the energy it gives you, right?
Well, that's what I tell people. Like, you know, like I ended up having to drive to Memphis. So my books got printed in Nashville. There was a snafu with my printer. So I ended up driving to Memphis. I live in upstate New York. It was 38 hours round trip. So I drove to Nashville. I picked up my books. I drove to Memphis. I had Jared sign them. And then I drove home. It was 38 hours. I didn't feel that. Like, Thanksgiving with my in-laws, like, that's 6 hours, and I feel every fucking minute of that. You know? Yeah. Like, it's one of those things, you know what I mean? Like I said, I love what I'm doing, and I've had the most amazing experiences. Like, I got into the Playboy party at San Diego Comic-Con last year. you know, like I'm the only person in comics that was in that room.
Wow.
And I've been at Hollywood parties, and I was on a yacht with Samoa Joe and Paul Heyman. Like, I've had, like, these insane experiences, and I'm a fucking warehouse manager in upstate New York. You know what I mean?
We get it. We've had those, too, just from doing this podcast, and it's like, wow, it's... And you almost go back to your real life, and you just go, did that really happen, or was that a dream? Like, you get these crazy events, but it's great, though, and you know, and keeps you going. All right, I think we're gonna wrap this sucker up and go OUT. We'll give you one last chance to plug your stuff, Mike. And I really enjoyed this, by the way. I enjoyed both talking comic books and wrestling. Here's my two passions in one person. You know, if you were a woman, I would definitely offer you a ring.
Wrestling ring?
A wrestling ring, absolutely.
We're going full Joey Ryan here, huh?
My penis is not that strong, I hate to admit.
You'll have to explain that to me.
Yeah. I'll explain that one to you tomorrow, Brett. I'll show you a video.
Oh, I don't know that I want the video, but
well, you do, trust me.
All of our stuff on social media is all Headlock Comic. It's a website, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all that jazz. I'm pretty easy to get a hold of. People want to talk to me. People find me on Facebook. Like, you know, I try to help people that are breaking in, and you know, because I've made just about every mistake you can make. So I try to help people if they want help or if they want to talk about wrestling or whatever. Our Kickstarter's got about 28 days left. It's already funded, so the book's going to get made one way or the other. But like I said, this version of the book is only available to the people who back the Kickstarters. We'll be running our next Kickstarter in July or August for Volume 4. And we've got the biggest lineup to date. I can tell you I've got Mick Foley, Rey Mysterio, and Zack Sabre already for stories. And I've got two or three other names that I'm not 100% on, but I'm like 90% on, that it's going to be a blowaway lineup. So many different guys from so many different parts of the world and different skill levels. And I'm super, super excited about it. And we're working on a special incentive, special version of the book for the people that have backed all the Kickstarters, like a variant cover that if it comes through, it's going to be amazing. So I'm really excited about what we're doing, and I'm really excited about what everything is sort of built to, you know, all the years of, instead of just the struggle and all the miles I've put, you know, in to get us to where we are. And it's, I think it's a really fun book for people who like wrestling and like comics. I think you should give it a shot. And, you know, I think you really, really like the stuff we've got coming up.
Thank you very much, Mike. We'll definitely keep in touch with you and talk to you again soon. And everybody, will be back with another We Talk Comics and We Talk Wrestling pretty soon. This time, no simulcast because, you know, I mean, you don't want that much of me on your radio at once.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
That was really good. I'm sorry about the technical issues. I think once we got into the meat of it, we got some really good stuff there, though. So I really do appreciate it. I'd like to keep in touch. We got